Welcome to the Think Data podcast, brought to you in partnership with Dataworks. If you want to stay up to date with the latest breakthroughs and trends in the world of data and artificial intelligence, and if you're curious about some of the strategies that companies and founders use to launch data and AI products, then you're in the right place. Our aim is to bring together a diverse lineup of fantastic guests, from the founders through to accomplished leaders and product owners at some of the most fascinating data and AI companies worldwide. They will each offer you their own unique insight into what it takes to launch and scale a great data business. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Think Data podcast in partnership with Dataworks. This is episode 2 of the 3rd season, and I'm super excited to welcome Suzanne El-Morsi to the show. Suzanne she's the co-founder and CEO of BrightHive, and they are a full stack data management platform powered by AI. She is a serial entrepreneur with over 22 years of experience in building and scaling tech startups, and I'm really excited to have you on. I know we've spoken I think in the run-up to the holiday season, and BrightHive, for me personally, as someone who's recruited in data analytics for best part of 12 years now, is that platform and is solving the problem that a lot of analysts, a lot of data teams and companies are trying to solve. So I was really looking forward to this call. And would you mind bringing up to speed? Because I know obviously 22 years experience, a huge amount of kind of experience and battle scars in this space. So I'd love to know a bit more about you and ultimately what brought you to set up BrightHive.
Certainly. Thank you for having me on today. Happy New Year to everyone who's going to be listening to this as well. So I'm born and raised in Cairo, Egypt. I came to the United States to do what all great immigrants do, is study. So I came to do my computer science master's, my graduate work, and this was the late 90s at the birth of the at sign, if we remember that, which is AKA the internet. And data for me has just been it's been a journey. It's a lifelong journey because as the internet came on and, a few years after that, the iPad /smartphone, the miniaturization of the computer, as they call it. And then, of course, the data world that has consistently been for over 2 decades now, because all of this technology is producing that data on top of what's already locked up in, mainframe, if you think about it. I started my career at IBM Global Services in the late 90s, Big Blue, which was, the place to be as a technology consultant and also as the most prominent technology firm at the time. Mm-hmm. So, my exposure to data, 30 years ago now, it just comes from looking at it when it was locked up in mainframe. And then the idea that we were, bringing on the internet and putting a web browser to transform businesses, like, for example, insurance policies for homeowners, for State Farm was a client, or Bank of America and the entire online banking world. So, we started to bring data into transforming business operations and experiences and such. And so when you fast forward to where we are today, and looking at how essentially data is core to any business, there's a new startup being born every minute on planet Earth, and it is producing data. Mm. So when we step back and we look at where are we with our data management and our ability to really have work, as we say here at BrightHive, our mission is to have data-driven work, right? Meaning that any decision, any task, any strategy, any planning, you are able to start from a point of being data and being informed, being data-driven and informed. Mm. And so my co-founder and I, our obsession with this kind of age-old problem, but data is very hard for people, right? The dream is that the decisions we make, the tasks that we execute on, the planning that we do comes from a very kind of informed real-time place where we know what insights are in our data assets. And there's, as I mentioned, not a single company that is short of data assets, but it's fragmented, right? It's distributed in different systems. It's dirty. Data is often dirty, not necessarily very clean off the bat. And so here we are essentially living through the AI adoption era, and AI needs clean data sets, mm-hmm. right? So Fundamentally, when you step back and say what brings us to this problem, or you know, why is our passions all around it, is we feel very strongly that we've made such great advancements, and you know, for society and humanity as a whole, from EVs to exploring Mars, to, like I mentioned, the internet, the smartphones, all kinds of gadgets in our home and our professional life. But where we're probably lagging is being able to work with our data seamlessly. Anyone in the enterprise, anyone in any company, whether you sit in marketing and strategy and procurement, wherever you are, you know, to us, these are the data consumers inside a company. And data teams are very overwhelmed and at capacity with kind of processing data requests from these data consumers, right? These are business folks that are trying to understand and have insights so that they can then execute plans that, that are sound for the business. But in the absence of access to data and insight, a lot of times you see a gap between the decisions we make against the data and what the data says. And so our mission here is to create a platform that helps give more runway to data teams in the enterprise, regardless of the size of the company. And so because usually data teams are central teams that support multiple functions. So how do you create more runway so that then those data analysts and data engineers and data scientists really work with business units and data consumers as a whole on the high value, high tasks, you know, high human intelligence tasks around, you know, data modeling and really to the core of what, you know, should the data be supporting and less about the grunt work of getting it usable, centralized, governed, cleansed, a lot of the grunt work, 80% of the work is grunt work. So you can actually have data sets.
It's fascinating really, because if you go back to the self-service, like reporting BI, you know, that was kind of the classic tech set. You'd obviously, you'd have your BI analysts, you have your engineers who'd make everything as clean as they could. Then obviously it'd be down to the stakeholders to effectively go and generate those reports or make those requests. And on your point, it's very valid that central BI team would be like a center of excellence. They'd have their tickets. They'd be working through those requests. So what part does the AI play now in terms of freeing up that stakeholder to access that in real time?
Right. So, you know, when you step back and you look at any organization, you know, there's a lot of workflows that drive that company, drive that organization. And the older the entity, the older the organization, the more complicated these workflows are. And so regardless of whether you sit on the in the business teams or if you sit in the data teams, you're really kind of held to those workflows of how and where can data come from, how, you know, all of the business processes around that data, the way reports are set up. It's just the way work was architected well before you and I would join any entity. And so when you step back and look at the complexity of workflows and processes that have been set in companies, what you start to see is that it is a really a heroic effort when you are going to be driven only by human capacity to understand workflow so that you can actually start to unlock and work at the core problem, which is data sets, where they live and how do we bring them together and so forth. And so the very first goal for agents, to your question, is to be able to essentially kind of break down these workflows, teach the agents the workflow and let them run, right? Let them run faster than us so that we don't need to spend our time, you know, trying to figure out a magnitude of complicated workflow. The very first, you know, important building block for AI is to understand what should the AI agents learn around these processes. Think specifically also with supply chain, our supply chain clients. I mean, there's just a lot of workflows. And so the very first burden that's kind of automated here is being able to create a blueprint of workflows inside a company and teach the agents to do that. This is, you know, kind of step number one, because the data is kind of the next layer here. All these workflows produce the data. And so ultimately the goal of our agents is to execute data tasks in the same way that Alex would as a human data analyst on a team or a data scientist. And so when you're teaching an agent, you know, our data engineering agent or a data governance agent, the protocol and the processes that a human would execute, and you want it to do it in the same way. So it needs to understand the rules, the workflows, the policies, in the case of governance, the data contracts, so that it then can take that and just do it autonomously all the time with obviously improved performance because it's going to learn off of the mistakes. And so for us, when we think about what we're really freeing up here as far as capacity. You know, it is number one, being able to move out of, as you mentioned, Tableau and BI. Those tools came on, but when you look at actual utilization, right, it's very low, and it's for the highly skilled, right? And in many cases, you also have to know a level of coding so that you can actually modify and work in Tableau in a very advanced manner. And so all of this is the world that we're starting in from, being able to just automate this so that when you are supporting a business unit, you're less, you know, kind of involved in that foundational layer, and the agents are able to do that work for you. Plus, let me add here, the user for BrightHive can be Alex or someone technical on the data side, and it can be, you know, Julie that is in the business side. Mm. The power of the platform is that it liberates the necessity and removes it to be a technically skilled, data person, because the Julie who's in sitting in the business units can just load the data that she has. First of all, our platform lives in the cloud of the company, of our customers.
Yep.
Anyone in the company is able to access the BrightHive platform and be able to load the data assets, unstructured or structured, or connect to, we have over 350 connectors, whatever data repositories, you know, your warehouse, if it's a Snowflake, and create the pipelines automatically. Once that happens, then what you created is essentially, you know, the freedom, if you will, that anybody in the enterprise can start pumping data, and the agents are going to start to in orchestration, take the data tasks that Alex and the data team would have historically only been the ones that are able to do or execute. Mm. And then from there, what you're creating is this kind of new engagement and way of working between Julie, right, in the business unit, and Alex and the data teams, as she's trying to essentially unlock the insights that she has from her data set and creating all kinds of data products. And data products are obviously a known term in the data world. And therefore, what we get excited about is when we hear our customers talk about their teams work in orchestration a lot more effectively and efficiently, because the engagement with their central data, you know, teams is much more informed, and almost half of the lift has happened because the people that sit in business units have already started unlocking insights. So when Julie's engaging with Alex, she's really getting down to trying to understand why a report, for example, looks a certain way, which data fields it's pulling in from, and you're really working at the, you know, at the ground floor of data models. Mm-hmm. Versus where most of the time the friction is that most business units and most data consumers, as we've defined them, which is anybody in the organization, doesn't even know where to go to access that data in the first place. It's locked up in processes and systems.
Yeah, I think it's really smart because you're giving data to everyone. You're basically opening the access to everyone, because typically data or the to derive insight from that data and make sense of it is really saved to a select few who could, as you say, build the reports, build the dashboards, access the data, clean it. But actually what BrightHive's doing is really consolidating all of that and making, you know, for example, Julie, as you say, on the business side, she doesn't need to be technical. She can access it. So therefore it's just making things more efficient. I think it's a... Yeah, really, I'm going to dig on the bit about the technical piece and the teams and the business in a bit, because I think that's I know people listening to this, I know certain people will be listening to this going, okay, so what about the role of the data analyst? So I think we'll dig on that. But I'm really keen to touch on your startup journey, because I think when we spoke before the holidays, you know, three times founder, I think you said yourself, two successful, one maybe not as, but a lot of people listen to founders and they think, oh, I want to become a founder. And they kind of forget that there's a huge amount of work, effort and tears that go into getting a business up and running. And on BrightHive specifically, you're entering a space with AI agents, automation, data as a service, platform as a service. There's some big players out there really trying to feed into this. What is your go-to-market and sales strategy, and how are you going to stand out against the bigger players out there with huge pockets?
Right. Totally. So from a GTM perspective, you know, I will say the journey of being an entrepreneur and GTM, the very first part is founder-led sales.
Yeah.
Like this phase cannot be bypassed in any way. And we're a young startup, but we have a big goal, right? Mm. And we believe technically, so my co-founder, you know, Maggie, his whole journey, he's been a data practitioner, a data nerd, as he calls it. He's our chief data nerd. And I'm the software girl. I'm a chief software person, right? So when we met, essentially, we agreed that the issues and this on-ramp, as we call it, the friction of working with data can be solved by software.
Yeah.
So we agreed on that and we founded, you know, and here you have BrightHive. We founded BrightHive around this concept of being a platform that gives business teams and all people in an enterprise an end-to-end data management analysis platform. And so we had to prove that that's true. And so we actually started first by working with low data maturity organizations.
Yeah.
You know, think about, you know, workforce, think about higher education. They have a lot of data, but the enterprise and the institutions are not necessarily very data savvy. Mm-hmm. Some of our very first clients are one CIO and one data analyst, right? And no shortage of data, but capacity is a challenge of headcount, technical skill, and in a lot of cases also money, because data engineers and skilled ones are expensive, you know, mm-hmm. rightfully so. And if you can find them even. And so initially, you know, our kind of our GTM messaging that resonated was you're essentially increasing your headcount without increasing your OPEX, because you are the agents function and work as if you had a data team in a box, right? Think about it for a minute. And let's remember that this whole topic, you know, that we're discussing here today is because of the rise of the MDS, which is a double-edged sword, right? Absolutely love the fact that we have such evolution in the managed data stack and the data marketplace as a whole, but you also have so many brands, right? So many specific tools to do very specific things, the DBT and the ETL, like it's very specialized. And so the rise of that created the situation that we're in where Julie that we're mentioning would not know where to start because this is a landscape that is very busy, right? And doesn't have the expertise and such. So when you step back and think about what BrightHive saw in this kind of busy, you know, market matrix and opportunity as a whole is to try to streamline all of these decisions into one deployment, which is BrightHive. And we're built on a modern data stack of partners that you, all the brands you would know.
Yeah.
So that when you are selling into the data, low data maturity organization, by implementing BrightHive, you essentially get the MDS and the agents at the same time.
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
The GTM here is that in one annual spend with us, which is half of the salary of a data engineer or data analyst, you're getting both the data infrastructure, the agentic layer for all of the data work, right? And you don't have to worry about all of the complicated. And by the way, that is not even $100,000, right? Mm. But when you put the tools and the salaries of people together, most of our market research at minimum 1 to 1.5 million when you're staffing, you know, these bigger 100%,
100%.
Teams. Now, easily, right? And that's on the low end.
Mm.
Of course, this is very much doable when you're a bigger organization. And maybe you even have multiple data engineering teams to, you know, think places like McDonald's, you know, which is actually 2 blocks away from us here in BrightHive's, near BrightHive's offices. They probably have multiple data teams servicing the entire enterprise. This is a global organization. Mm. Think Walmart, you know, think all the brands that you and I know that are really big. So when we started, we kind of went in, and if you step back and look at the United States, there are 35,000 registered entities that have between 500 to 5,000 employees. So truly, that's a $4.6 billion opportunity where that segment probably is very much aspiring to be more data-driven in its work and its operations. But also, how do you do that when the cost of teams and tools, and more importantly, as I mentioned too, when you look at all the things that you have to buy to build an MDS, it's quite a bit of an spend. Mm-hmm. So our GTM out of the gate is a differentiation to speak about the data foundation that you need, which is your MDS, a singular harmonized stack, because we're built on that. And you know, you can pick and choose whether you're going to be on Snowflake, Redshift, so we can deploy. You can take our agents to be in your cloud or ours. We can manage it for you, or if you're more advanced, you can just take the agents. And that created optionality for CIOs and CDIOs, and that's what we sell into. This is really coming out of this CIOs or CDOs budget to create bring in a powerful tool that works across the entire data workflow with a fraction of the cost of one headcount.
Yeah, I think you summed it up really well, the kind of that data team in a box, because it's quite daunting is everyone knows they need to make sense of data, and everyone knows there's data that's not being utilized and they're missing out on whether it's revenue opportunities or inefficiencies or whatever it may be. And actually, if you're an early stage business or a smaller company or a less mature data environment, it can be quite daunting. And I talk from the staffing side of things. Yeah, you're right. If you want to integrate any form of AI, or we're talking well in the millions of dollars, but equally even a good data team, that's equally the challenge. You've got to hire them, you've got to retain them. So yours, effectively, they can manage it themselves, or effectively you can manage it. So they have the option, I guess.
Right. So it opens up a wider. And so we started there, kind of like that middle market, and then we moved into the enterprise. Just last week, and to add on to this point, I spoke with a very good friend of mine from business school, and she's an executive at one of the notable utility companies here in the Midwest region of the United States. And, she mentioned something very important that is very common. Also, if you think about legacy industry, which is infrastructure. And the point here was, in the utility and energy space, they are working on upgrading a lot of their infrastructure, but this is between, a 4 to 5 year plan. Mm. So if you wait until you upgrade just technical architecture, right, and the infrastructure, and to be kind of more, forward and more data centric and more data driven, you're losing 60 to 78 months where you're very limited in the insights that you can capture.
Yeah.
So her point to me is, we don't want to wait only then to be able to processing our data. Is there a way that we can start analyzing the mountains of data that we have while we're doing this infrastructure update at the same time? And so the other point to see here is that we're really democratizing the access to data, both around people in the enterprise being technical or not. And we're also saying that the promise of AI and agents as a whole is that it can work at that layer without directly on the data, right? And we can deploy BrightHive in your infrastructure, regardless of kind of what, where you may be standing with the status of your infrastructure. And in the energy industry, most utilities or entities you'll speak to, or energy companies, unless they're very new, they are carrying that technical debt and burden of aged infrastructure where the data lives on. So you can now start to see, and this is a multi-billion dollar entity. So it's not, data maturity is a different reality for them.
Yeah, no, I think it's super, super interesting. And obviously, you're generally solving a problem that needs to be solved. And I think you referenced the name, it's data team in a box. And obviously I echoed that. So obviously people to listen to this, there's a blend of the technical folk, the analysts, the engineers, and so obviously if you hear that, the immediate thought is, hang on a minute, is that replacing me? I see the benefit, and they should understand the wider labor force. You've got Julie, you're democratizing access to data. Everyone gets an opportunity to look at the data and drive insight. But what are your genuine thoughts on how a product like BrightHive will impact data teams? Because there's a question we get all the time, especially post-COVID, where we've had this recession looming. We've had, data teams being, underutilized, understaffed. It's been a real tricky time, because I think everyone's making sense of the AI element to this. But what would you say to that? And I'm sure this is a conversation that people want to stay with you. So what would you say to them?
All the time. This, it is only right and fair that humans, when something is new, fear comes out first. I mean, very few of us are going to embrace something that they have no idea about with full excitement. Yeah. I mean, it exists, but that's usually the minority. Mm. Most people want to know, what am I coming up against, right? Most people want to know, and this is their livelihood, their work, their job, their pay, so it is a valid question. What's going to happen? What's the world going to look like in, 3 to 4 years? Especially when you're also seeing the media talk so much about and cover more about how this era that we're living is like nothing else we've seen, right? When you hear big statements like this is not like the internet, this is not like anything else we have seen. And therefore, you don't have a reference point to compare it to. So then you're just kind of in the oh shit moment. Mm. And so we do ask, we get asked all the time, what happens to me now? And fundamentally, and actually BrightHive, we will be publishing a piece about this. We're just starting at it here in the new year, about our strong point of view that this is a reskilling and adaptability moment. It is not, it is in any way intending to say we're putting people out of work. Mm. So much of what we're trying to do here is really just have people focus on the things that they love to do. There are a lot of skilled data professionals all over the world. And that brain power needs to go towards really processing and looking at data differently than the things that I just talked about with infrastructure and quality and governance and all of these things, right? There is so much more for us that we don't even know about yet, because most of the people that you're staffing are running JIRA tickets from different business, units that are looking to update a field in a database or refresh a dashboard. And so highly skilled data engineers, data analysts, machine learning, all of these people are really stuck in the process, right, of doing very mundane, boring work. When technically, if things are flowing smoothly, right, and if people are accessing data in an enterprise or an organization from many different dimensions, the questions, the quality of the questions, in my opinion, the quality of the projects that are going to be commissioned, the innovation dollars that are going to go into new initiatives, because we're accelerating time to insight, which is a KPI for BrightHive. That's the whole point of the platform. When you deploy a platform like BrightHive enterprise-wide, you're telling everyone you have the authority, the right, and the ability to start unlocking the data assets that you have in your function, in your business unit, in your geography, in your state, wherever, right? And be able to look at what does the data saying. So then you can identify areas for improvement, for innovation, for growth a lot faster, because that data is visible to you. And in this moment, I would say that the data engineers and the data analysts inside an organization can have a very different relationship with business units and, business decision makers and, business analysts, because at this point you're creating a brand new world, right? A substance out of the mass. That new substance to us, it looks very different than when Suzanne came from Cairo in the mid-90s and for 30 years has really been working in a very, analog, antiquated world with data that never gives you the full picture when you need it, right? So I would absolutely say, I heard this statement the other month in November when we were at the Scale Up AI event for Insight Partners in New York City, which is a very reputable VCPE firm here in the US. And it was this CIO of the Mayo Clinic, which is a very well-known place in medicine here. Yeah. And he said he gets this question as well from all kinds of physicians. The idea that AI and Mayo Clinic is one of the brands in the United States that is really adopting AI in a very different way than any other medical or healthcare system. And a lot of physicians are freaking out, right? Because they think about them too. Like, I went to school, medical school for all of these years. What's happening, right? Is AI really going to be taking my clinics and my patients? And his response to them is very singular and made a lot of sense. A physician with AI will be the one that displaces a physician without AI. So he's never betting, and they're never saying that the physician is gone altogether. In the same way as we're saying here, the data analysts don't go away. The data analysts get redefined, right, to be actually more value-driving catalysts in the enterprise, because they're working with business teams at the highest level of data understanding and data maturity. We are moving you much further up the chain because everyone's looking at the data a lot faster. And then you're driving a very different type of conversation inside the enterprise. What used to take weeks and months to do because the data is so difficult and dirty and hard will now take you hours and a couple of weeks because you've created that liberation. So that's really my genuine feeling, and I hope you even feel it in my voice. But we're publishing it in Q2, a piece that when we're working with it around some of the members of our board who are investors, who are impact investors and care deeply about workforce, and this concept of what is the future of workforce in an AI era. And we're going to be, interviewing and talking with not just, foundations, but also universities. I mean, what happens to universities, right? What kind of pathways and skills do they train on, right? And we're going to be looking at employers and try to give a 360 point of view on perhaps what the new world could look like with AI tooling.
Well, I think anyone listening to this needs to make sure they give Suzanne and obviously BrightHive a follow, because I think that kind of piece, those questions are asked all the time. And I think actually the response you gave was obviously super passionate, but also relevant, because, they talk about recruiters being displaced by AI. They talk about every walk of life, AI has the potential impact. But actually our view is, as staffing partners primarily, people use it to free themselves up and become more efficient and also invest their time and energy in learning new things. And I think that's, I'm really on board with that. And I'm really interested, obviously, I mentioned at the top, you're a 3-time founder yourself. you've gone into companies or you've addressed different challenges with different solutions. You obviously sounds like Bright Hive is going the right way, but there's a lot of people out there who do have aspirations to be a founder. So what advice would you have to anyone who maybe have a great idea? They might have a background like yourself who have really kind of risen through the ranks in the larger players like the IBMs, but there's an itch that needs to be scratched here. What advice would you give them who before they consider launching a product or their first business?
Right. It's very, natural that human beings overemphasize and inflate the risks and underestimate the opportunity. And that, be mindful that we do that. Just, we always do, right? Whether it is in any aspect of your life. And that also stems from the fear. So we just make the risk and the what if could go wrong, 3 to 5x bigger than it really is. And you completely lose sight of how much bigger the opportunity is for you. And so that limits us to start anything. And so the hardest thing, and if you speak to any experienced founder, they'll tell you the hardest part of the journey is actually starting.
Yeah.
Because that mental block that you have to get through and then going to start. So the first advice I would tell people is be mindful of the fact that this is naturally going to be happening in your mind. You probably have been carrying a great idea for so long, but you're hesitant because of the risks. And even Amazon's Jeff Bezos said that 2 months ago about just the hardest thing for him was raising the Series seed back in 92. Right. And where he had to tell people, what is the internet? So just know that that naturally happens. You need to contain that. You need to remember that whatever you think the opportunity is, multiply it by 5 in reward, because it's probably true. Now, between you and that outcome is a journey, which starts with betting on self.
Yeah.
The other point I'll tell you is that we are not really good at just things like filling your cup and having a lot of self-confidence.
Yeah, that's fair.
Man or woman. I actually don't even think it's just singular to women or the studies that say women are less confident. That's absolutely not true. I think humanity as a whole, people just generally, because we're risk averse, question our own ability and then sometimes don't necessarily bet on self in a bullish way, because that is what is necessary to become a founder. I left the big corporate world here in the United States, which everyone thought I was crazy back in 2012. How are you leaving GE and HSBC? And these are all places that I worked at, IBM, and I was at Publis Sapient when I was, leaving to become transitioning to become a founder after completing my executive MBA from University of Chicago, Chicago Booth, right? And I focused for 2 years studying entrepreneurship and venture capital finance, so I can really understand this world. So I'm a true technologist. My first graduate degree also in computer science. I've been a coder. I've been built product. I've done the whole big corporate, always been a technologist all my life. And here I am going to start a business, right? And went and kind of studied the books, if you will, at the number one school in the world around this. And now I'm going. It has been 13 years. I've never looked back. For 13 years, it's betting on self. For 13 years, it is, remembering that this is my life's mission. This is my legacy. I wouldn't rather be anywhere else than working for myself. And it is hard because you are the salesperson and the accountant and the customer success.
You're everything.
And the CTO sometimes. Yeah. I mean, my co-founder is our CTO, but sometimes, we fill in for each other. So that's the second item, right? So just be mindful of our tendency to overinflate the risk, underestimate the opportunity. Remember that we never bet on self as bullish as we should. And if you're a parent, your kids are so great, because we should be more like that, which is the world's our oyster. And then thirdly, I would say to you, find a co-founder. Okay. This journey requires that there's complementary skills between you and someone else. It is already hard, and you need someone to pick you up when you're down, and vice versa, right? So Matt Gee and I, we are perfect. I mean, we're oil and water, but our skill sets, our superpowers are very complementary and extremely different, right? And this does a lot in moving the company forward, because there are days where you're going to feel you've done nothing today, but you have. It is just a different set of skills on what's being executed. And so I would say those three things, and of course, I still got the reaction of you're crazy to be leaving a big salary, the big team, security of that, you know, in 2012, and jumped to become a starving entrepreneur who also for a while wasn't paid. There's going to be moments in time where you have to preserve cash burn and you may not be paid. So I think, and for everybody, that equation's different. But if the things that you can control, which is your kind of psychology and your commitment, and you get a few swings at the bat in this life. If every swing is about a decade, we don't have many. So you better be spending, you know, your decades at the batting, you know, for the right swings and the right opportunities is how I look at it.
I love that. You know, I think everyone listening here probably wants to rush up and become an entrepreneur after that. Like, yeah, as you say, it's not for everyone. I think your point about the co-founder is actually is the most common bit of feedback we have when we ask this question on other episodes. It's is that because you have that, is someone to bounce ideas off? Because I'm assuming being, you know, a sole founder, it's quite a lonely place. Is that for you to kind of, you know, bounce ideas off, challenge each other?
Yeah. Oh, yes. You know, I cannot, the best days for me are when Matt and I are, you know, able to carve out enough time. And sometimes it's like 2 hours to just talk. We don't, you know, in this world, in our days and the way that we live our lives, we don't carve out white space to think and talk. You know, I admire young people, children, you know, just they can sit and draw and talk. And these are natural things, natural human tasks that we should be doing to let the brain imagine, to let the brain wander in the wild, right? And so naturally, a founder is a dreamer, right? You have the world needs something that you believe in, and you're going out to make the world have that, right? And you're incepting it and building it. And so naturally, we're dreamers, and our minds behave in that way. So when you have that, you know, co-founder to just be able to bounce ideas off of, to disagree with. I mean, he and I disagree. I mean, we have battle scars and we can still have a drink and go to the pub and we're fine. But by the way, oh yeah, there's been days where it's all out shouting war too, you know, so, but because we're human and that's passion, right? We are a sponge for each other. We have so much passion around this company and so much passion around this business. And as you said in the very beginning, this is so new. There are so many people that are like, what is this? This is not possible. So the naysayers are going to be everywhere, by the way. They're everywhere. They're in the closets. They're coming out of the woodworks because no one wants to give you the benefit of the doubt that you're probably onto something great. And so your co-founder is that, you know, go-to person that has the same belief, that has the same passion, that is also in it, right? You got to put skin in the game, right? It is your time, it's your money, it's your sweat equity, it's all of that stuff. And the journey itself is so lonely. I mean, there are days when I'm here working by myself, all solo for 17 hours, haven't spoken to anyone other than people on Zoom, but there's no one to turn around and say, I'm having a really rough day today. Or, oh my God, let's celebrate this win. I finally got a customer that I've been trying to chase for, you know, 6 weeks to accept getting a demo. It's the small wins, you know, Alex. And we just don't work that way. We are overscheduled. We are running from meeting to meeting. A lot of noisy conversations that don't really produce value. And fundamentally, when you are working in a startup, you are limited resources. So the idea of productivity and value is so acute, right? You don't have all the time in the world because you don't have all the cash in the world, right? You could spend your whole life building this, but at some point you got to be making money. And so the natural pressures of limited resources make you get pushed to create high value outputs. And the what I love about startups and the way it really kind of works is get something out there to the market at 60% complete. Perfect is the enemy of good. The market should be telling you what you should do and to refine. Maybe that's not a great feature. Maybe it's another feature. So if you just sit in the closet and over engineer and be building this product, you are doomed to fail. You need to get it to 50 to 60% complete and put it out there. Have users and the market essentially co-create and create this iterative cycle. So it actually, in a way, I would say my last 13 years as a whole, if I step back, are very different than the 16 years before that in big corporate, because I'm not conforming to exist like I did for 16 years. I couldn't think differently in GE, or I couldn't think differently. This is the way business is run. This is what teams do. This is the processes, as we said earlier. But when you are in the world of entrepreneurship, you don't have to conform to anything. You are creating this world. And so you have to bet on self, be really good at execution, you are going to create waste, but you're working towards minimizing the waste, right? Because waste does create learning. So it's not, we're not anti-waste here, but timeliness of it. And then be able to maximize the resources that you have, because in many cases, you're bootstrapping, it's a friends and family round, it's, you know, some of your life savings that you're taking in, whatever the case is, you're trying to get to market fast and have the market really build the next kind of frontier of the product, the experience, or whatever you're bringing. So to me, the last 13 years feel more harmonious with my lifestyle and how I think than probably the first 16. But when you start with big corporate, you're young.
Yeah.
You're in your 20s. They're very formative years. Mm. And I'm very grateful for them. When I exited, I was 34. And today I'm on the doorstep of 47. So they did what they did for me, helped me understand how the world works. And now I'm just creating, you know, a very different kind of world and pushing in a very exciting time.
Amazing. Well, look, thanks so much, Suzanne. I think it's a great kind of great moment to thank you for your time. I think what you're doing at Bright Hub, I think the problem is solving is genuine. I think the passion and the insight you've shown around life as an entrepreneur will make for a really popular listen, I think. So thanks so much, Suzanne. It's been my pleasure. I'm glad we could make this happen.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank
you. Happy New Year again.
Take care. Bye-bye. All the best.
Thanks.